Deja vu.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Milkshakes, Markets, Madness. It's been a wild year, and we're going to bring the wild year to a close here with our final full-length episode of 2023, and I guess a potential exclamation on season one. Now, don't worry. We know the markets will continue humming along without us, so if something crazy does happen, we will hop in and do a midweek update or some similar type of update. And for sure, there's going to be something happening next week, as we will discuss in the show, because it is a full calendar. But before we jump ahead to what is going to be a crazy week next week, it was a crazy one this week, Brent. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's kind of one of those seasons where you just don't know what's going to happen, because it can really go anyway. I mean, I could make a very strong case for an absolute ripping market into the end of the year, and I can make a case for it to be down or 5 or 10% over the next 14 days. But it's kind of, you know, listen, you got to give it to the bulls. Whoever has been bullish this year, at least so far, they have been right. You know, say what you want, say it's lucky, say it's all manipulated, whatever. But listen, if you were bullish this year and you stayed long, especially in a technology, you killed it, and I salute you. I was overly bearish this year. I wasn't expecting a collapse, but I wasn't expecting this. And so, you know, to those who were, I congratulate them.
Well, we have really beat to death the theme of violently sideways, or perhaps we should give credit to the markets for doing that. But it doesn't just extend throughout this entire year. You were looking at a number of asset classes and their performance over the last 2 years. And basically, it's been a full round trip. Let me cue you up with just some of those numbers, and you can talk about any one you want or all of them as a whole. The Bitcoin, I think, let's just get that one out of the way. Although, depending on when you kind of bought in, because it had such a big drawdown, it looks like it's been up dramatically, and perhaps from, you know, the low to where it is now, for sure, it's more than 200% up. But when you're looking at a 2 year round trip, date to date, it's actually down 5%. Gold is up 9%, and the dollar is up 8%. I think those three things are an interesting contrast, because when we look at some of the other asset classes and how they performed the last 2 years, it is kind of funny that the dollar milkshake is really the only two things that are performing, dollar and gold up together and up about the same. Silver's down 2%. And then you have oil down 8%. The housing market, looking at the builders as a barometer, is slightly up 2%. And the VIX has just been beaten down. It's down 25% from where it was this time 2 years ago. So feel free. Let's hear your thoughts on some of these performances.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really pretty amazing. And I knew it was close, but I knew it was this way in equities, but I didn't really realize it was this way in just about everything. And so when I look at the last 2 years, I just went back and I looked at from the beginning of January of 2022 until where we're at now, just about everything is within 10% of where it was 2 years ago. And just about everything has done a round trip. You know, we had obviously had a very hard sell-off in the markets last year in 2022, and we've had a huge rally this year in 2023. And, but if you look at these things, I mean, equities are basically right where they started in 2022. Oil, just down a little bit. Gold, just up a little bit. Dollar, just up a little bit. Bitcoin, flat. Silver down a couple percent. The miners are down. And the reason I went back and looked at the last 2 years is because the beginning of January of 2022, really the beginning of the year last year, was when the whole rate hiking cycle kicked off. You know, the first time they raised was in March of 2022, but they really started talking about it. And you know, all the pundits and the markets, that was, you know, rate hikes were the topic du jour at the beginning of the year, almost 24 months ago now. And so it's amazing to me. And listen, I know that people will think this is, some people are going to think this is nuts, but Powell has done a masterful job. Now, if you don't think Powell has done a masterful job, the only way that you can think he has not done a masterful job is if you don't think central bankers should exist in the first place. And if you believe that, then I'm with you. That's fine. I can agree to that. But once you recognize that they do exist and you do have to take what they do into consideration, and if you are somebody who follows the markets and is involved in the markets, you can't really just ignore the central bankers. And if you measure him based on what he is tasked with doing, it's amazing. I mean, listen, and I'm not saying this is going to last. And in fact, I don't think it's going to. And I can make my case of why that is, but that's beside the point. Like, we are where we are. And when you think that 2 years ago, rates were at zero, and now they're at 5.5%. And at the same time, we have basically the lowest unemployment rate in, I don't know, 3 decades, or within a stone's throw of the lowest unemployment date in decades. Equities are within 1 or 2%, very close to their all-time highs. Volatility is at 12 or 13 or whatever it is. And, you know, we haven't had this cascading set of defaults. Now, some people will say, well, the banks almost went down. Well, yeah, you're right. They had to come in and they had to set up a facility. But again, you have to take, if you're managing money and if you're allocating assets, you have to take the fact that central bankers are going to get involved and they are going to set up new programs into consideration. So if most people thought, well, they're out of bullets. There's nothing else they can do. Well, you know what? They came in and they set up a facility, and within 2 weeks, everything was fine and markets are back at their highs. And, people say, well, the U.S., this hit the U.S. first. Well, the same thing happened in these other countries 15 months ago now. The Bank of England had to step in. The Bank of Japan had to step in. China had to step in. ECB had to step in. So, over the last 2 years, all the different central banks have had to do something. But they've also maintained their tighter monetary policy. And listen, Powell has more room right now to deal with whatever problems come than Bernanke had in 2008. And when 2008 came along, I think rates were 3.5%. I mean, they're at 5.5 now. He's been reducing the balance sheet. Now, I know people say, well, it's minor. Well, yeah, sure it is. But it's more than the rest of the world's been doing. And so the point is I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody. And I talked to a lot. I don't know anybody who 2 years ago thought that he could take rates from 0 to 5.5% and we would have asset prices where they are today. Now, some people were bullish over the last year because they thought he would be cutting and they thought that monetary policy would be shifting. And so therefore they were bullish. Great. Good job. I tip my cap to him, but they haven't moved monetary policy. Now, we've talked many times how markets trade on expectations. And part of the reason that markets are back at their highs is the expectation that monetary policy is going to turn very quickly or in very short order. And that is why the markets have gotten ahead of it. Fair enough. And again, I agree with you if Powell, starts dropping rates, then that should ease monetary consistency, and maybe that justifies higher equity prices. But the point is so far he's actually done it. Now, I actually don't think that's going to last, and I've been saying this for a while. I think we probably need some kind of a hard pullback in order to provide the juice to then break out to significant all-time highs. And so I'm not an Uber bear. I don't think we're going into a five-year depression where all asset prices are going to fall 80% and stay down there. I think we're going to 60,000 on the Dow and 6,000 on the S&P and, whatever, 25,000 on the NASDAQ. But I don't think we're going there straight from here. I think we are going to have a pullback. I've been saying that for a while. Listen, we got a little minor pullback in September, the part of October, but all of that has already been erased. And again, I know I'm kind of rambling here, but I'm impressed with what Powell has done. I'm not somebody who likes central bankers, and I don't think that they will ultimately be successful. And I know there's people out there that are right now saying, yeah, Brent, but just wait 6 months. Okay, fine. But you've been saying that for a year. And so far, he's so far he's done it, you know? And so, I give the guy credit. To me, it's really amazing. It's just an amazing time to be in this business.
Well, our milkshake fans love when you ramble. I'm going to take that rambling and do a bit of rambling myself so that we can set you up for your next splurge of comments. Because if we were going to have a time machine and look back on this year and decide what kind of themes we would structure the show around, we almost were gifted with that time machine in a lot of ways, because looking back, I mean, the things that we've talked about, specifically Violently Sideways, I mean, we more or less just had a 2-year great reset, right? We're back to exactly where we were before. Now, we've also talked consistently at various points about, you know, the expectations driving markets, but we've also talked about in different types of ways, how not to lose your head, how not to get caught up in narratives. And I mean, this is like the perfect, case in point with how, the central bankers don't know what they're doing. They're going to blow up the world. Powell they're going to raise rates and everything's going to crash. Oil's going to 300. I mean, you can literally just go down the list of things and look at where we were at the start of rate hikes, even at the start of this specific year. And every one of those narratives was dead wrong. And it's, we know emotionally that we can get it wrong. And we know the idea that the herd always gets slaughtered and to move against some of those majority viewpoints, but not many people have done that. Now, one thing that's interesting, now that we've kind of gone full circle and we're going into a new year, it's kind of exciting because we don't really have a momentum either way. And everyone kind of is putting their chips back on the table for a new game without any real clear indicator of what's going to happen. But one of the things I find interesting is specifically with Bitcoin, because of everything that went on in that market, tons of fraud, tons of speculation, it was really the marketplace that had a wipeout, that had a clear out. And it's probably one of the reasons why it's been able to have this big, consistent move up. Now, we talked about, I think it might have even have been last week, if not 2 weeks before that, where you had made the point about, there needs to be some kind of bearish pullback before you can really have that thrust higher. And it seems like, Bitcoin kind of had that. Now, going into the new year, where are you going to stack your chips? Do you feel like in order for the bull market to continue, we need some cleansing moment?
Well, yeah, so this is the thing. And this, I'll even relate this to the milkshake theory, because, a lot of people think that when I talk about the milkshake theory, I think the dollar is going to go up every day straight up. And it's just this huge, rocket ship higher. And, that's just not the way markets work. And as much as we might like it to be that way, it's just not, right? And so markets have the pendulum to them. They typically swing from one extreme to the other. We talked, I think if people were to go back and listen to the episode at the end of October, I think I said we could get a bounce out of the Fed meeting. Now, I didn't think it was going to be a month and a half. I didn't think it was going to be a 6-week bounce. I thought it might be a 2 or 3 week bounce. And I think I discussed that because the sentiment was getting pretty low. And this is the way things go. And again, I thought we might get a bounce for a couple weeks, but I thought, and I still think we'll probably get a rollover back down. But the reason I said that we were probably due for a bounce is because sentiment had gotten pretty, not totally extreme, but pretty low. And markets just don't go in a straight line forever. At some point, there's a washout and the pendulum starts to swing back the other way. But now here we are 6 weeks later after that comment, and we're right back. We are now back at the highs in equities. Sentiment is not extreme, but sentiment is about as positive now as it was negative in that show we had before the Fed meeting. And so it doesn't mean that it can't go higher. It can absolutely go higher. The point is though, like, momentum has been straight up for the last 6 weeks now, and markets don't go in a straight line. So I don't think we're going straight from here to, Dow 40,000 or S&P 6,000. I think you need that pendulum to swing back the other way, get everybody bared up, get everybody short, You had everybody buying puts, and everybody buying puts, and then that those short positions, those puts, that sentiment, that's what gives the market the fuel to then rocket back to the all-time highs. And so, you know, again, I don't like being in a permeable, because markets don't work that way. But if I will say, if we get this year-end rally, if we get another 2 weeks of this so far 6-week rally, and we're sitting at now super high sentiment on January 1st, and positioning is now the total opposite of where it was, you know, 6 weeks ago, and the put-call ratio is all the way at its lows, basically the exact opposite of where everything was January 12 months ago, then I will tell you right now, I will be directionally short the first week of January, if that's where we're at, because markets just don't keep going up in a straight line. Now, I really don't, you know, the reality of those, we could have a pullback here over the next couple of weeks. You know, we've got so much data coming out next week, and we've got the Fed meeting next week, and everybody knows we've got the holidays. And with the holidays, markets, you know, they're not typically as liquid as they would be in a regular month, because people are gone, they're on vacation, they're just not trading as much. So we could still get some fireworks here in the next couple of weeks to kind of pull that sentiment back a little bit. And so if we do get a sell-off, let's say we just get a slight sell-off. Let's say the equities kind of sell off, I don't know, 3 to 5% over the next 2 weeks. And then we go into January with everything kind of neutral. That's going to be a really tough call. I'm not sure what that'll be at that point. But again, I just find it fascinating that we basically are right back where we were 2 years ago. It's funny because this afternoon I was kind of thinking, I wasn't that excited to do this call, to be honest. I was like, oh, what are we going to talk? We're going to talk about. And then I started looking at charts, and I'm like, and the more I looked at charts, the more excited I got. So now I actually can't wait for January now. I'm so excited for next year.
Well, so just so everyone knows, Brent will not be releasing his Dow 40,000 book in the next 2 weeks, but it might come out in 2024. We'll see. You know, the other thing to keep in mind too is, you know, in the vein of chasing these narratives, you know, it was the end of US dollar funding. The government was no longer going to be able to fund itself. People were rejecting treasuries as collateral. You know, the 10-year hit 5%, and now we're all the way back down to close to 4%, 4.20, somewhere in that range, give or take. So what a massive move. I mean, at one point it was like a 90 basis point decline. So it's the more you jump into the deep end on these ideas and these storylines, the more likely you're going to get crushed by it. And one of those that I think has been, you know, it's this, oh, it's such an intuitive thing, or like, duh, how can you not see why this asset class or this price is going to go up or go down? That, like, it's so obvious, how can you not see it? Position is usually when you're probably onto something wrong. And I think oil was such a great example of that, because, hey, inflation expectations were the U.S. had lost control. Inflation was just going to go up. Energy is money, and oil is going to 300. At the same time, you know, Biden, shady Biden, you know, he's manipulating the SPR and selling oil just to win votes. And this is going to completely screw the U.S. and their, you know, their security, their oil security situation. And now here we are, oil prices down below from where they were selling most of that SPR. So you want to kind of talk about oil, because we just encapsulated the last 2 years. You gave your thoughts on the future, but let's talk about what some of the things that happened this past week.
Yeah, well, let's talk about oil, and let's talk about gold and silver as well, because I think these are perfect. And the reason I'd like to talk about these is, listen, all the stuff that I talk about, the reason I talk about it is I'm guilty of all of it myself. And I have taught myself, and this is kind of where discipline comes in, and it's really, really hard, especially when you feel in your bones fundamentally that a move should continue. But after doing this for 25 years, I've had to teach myself to take out the emotion. And once you start feeling emotional, that's when you really have to step back and just be brutally, brutally objective. And so, you know, I earlier this year, you know, Yeah, I made some comments about the SPR and that, you know, it was being used for political purposes. And anybody who thinks it was never going to be used for political purposes is just kind of naive to how politics works. And of course, everybody, you know, just couldn't, you know, the wait till oil's 300, it can't go any lower. Now it's at 90 and he's going to have to buy it back at 120 or 150. Well, now oil was in the 60s this week, right? I think it went to 69. And maybe that was the low. Maybe it'll go to 300 now. I don't know. But the point is when everybody says something can't happen, that's when you kind of got to say, well, you know what? It might happen. Same thing happened with the... And listen, whatever you say about Biden, and it's the same thing with Trump, people just cannot handle it when Trump says something that's correct. And, you know, so far, Biden selling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve has worked out for him. And a lot of people said it would not work out for him. Now, you might say, yeah, but he shouldn't do this. That's irrelevant. He did it. It doesn't matter whether he should have or not. If you're trying to make money, you got to get out of coulda, shoulda, woulda. This is what happened. He sold it. And by selling it, he was able to help keep the price down. Now, will it come back and bite him in 12 months? Maybe. I don't know. But as of right now, it worked for him. And part of the reason it worked for him is the U.S. is now the biggest oil producer in the world. I mean, it again, you say that's just a time, that's just a matter of time before the shale oil runs out. Okay, you're right. But so far, it's lasted longer than many of you thought it would. And oil price was in the 60s. And maybe it'll go to 65. I don't know. And they've been buying it back. Now, they've been buying it back slowly. But they don't have a plan to build it back up as high as it was before. And again, you just kind of have to accept this. And it doesn't mean that you have to give up on your thesis. If you believe oil's going to 150 or 200 or 300, I'm kind of with you. I kind of think it will. But again, markets don't go in straight lines. And the more something goes up and the faster it goes up, the harder it's going to come down when it does, because nothing goes up in a straight line. This is where we'll move over to gold and silver. Same thing. You know, a week ago, we were talking, I said, well, gold closed above 2000 for the end of November. And I said, it'll probably make a new all-time high, but I still think it's going to pull back. And part of the reason is because it's gone straight up. And sure enough, you know, oil's down 3% this week. Silver's down 10%. A week ago, oh my God, I had so much fun a week ago on Twitter. these gold and silver bugs were just all over me that I missed it. I missed it again. I missed it. You know, I was an amateur. I've never done this before. And, you know, you should have been buying. And I mean, and of course, you know, silver's down 10% this week. The miners are down, I think, 8 or 9% this week. And they're all right back where they were, you know, a month ago. Now, could silver be at $30 on Monday? Absolutely. Could gold be at $2,500? Absolutely. But the point is whenever people are absolutely losing their mind on something, be very, very careful, because you know, the pendulum is going to swing the other way. And the one thing I would say is I'm a closet gold bug, and I know a lot of people in the gold world. My biggest frustration with the gold world is I kind of found that many people, not everybody, but many people in the gold world are just not interested in trying to figure out why gold hasn't broken out. And they're just interested in being right when it happens. And I just think that's the wrong way to manage money. I don't think that they're intellectually curious, many of them. Again, not all of them. I have a lot of friends that are very good people, and I think that they do a good job, and you know, I respect them tremendously. But there's a lot of people in that world who just they don't want to try to figure out why they've been wrong time after time after time. And I think that's what was going on last week, is they kind of felt the time was here. And listen, I get it. When you're frustrated and then it goes your way, of course you're going to talk a little bit. Dude, I talk trash all the time. I grew up playing basketball, and when I would miss shots, I'd be upset. And when I made them, I would talk trash. That's just the way it works. It's the way it goes. So I get it. But, you know, I for anybody that's managing their own money, it's okay to have fun. It's okay to, like, you know, spike the ball every now and then. I think that's part of the game. And talk a little trash and have fun, that's fine. But just whenever you find yourself talking a little too much, then that's probably when you're going to get hit upside the head. And again, I know this because I've gotten hit upside the head many times myself.
Yeah, well, the response was definitely a bit, you know, a bit enthusiastic. There's a clear difference between risk management and having an ideology. And I think the way you phrased it was pretty spot on. That I think people are more interested in being right or being there when their call actually proves to be right, and ignoring all the past failures and the drawdowns and everything else. And the spiking of the ball reference, or you know, the talking trash reference reminds me of the story of, I forget who he was playing against, but Kobe Bryant basically wasn't having the best first half, and whoever he was up against was, you know, feeling it and felt like he was in the zone and made some sort of remark to Kobe about it. And Kobe kind of patted him on the rear and said, good game. And the guy was like, why is he saying good game? It's only the first half. And Kobe went on like a 50-point tear, and the guy didn't, I think, score the rest of the game. So it's it happens in all walks. I know some people who are deep in love with the finance world maybe not have a sports background, but there's a lot of lessons in the sports world to the markets, which I think is why there's so much enthusiasm from people in both. But speaking of this week, which is the topic we're on right now, there's a few other things worth pointing out, most specifically today with the non-farm payroll report. So we've had a violently sideways 2 years. We've had a violently sideways year. We've had a violently sideways quarter. The market is looking for reasons to ramp up. A lot of these assets, like gold, were moving on the fact that rate cuts were now almost a sure thing. I think it was 80% March, 100% by June or July. And then we have what would be considered a hawkish non-farm payroll. The payrolls beat expectations, which were 185. It came in at 199. Unemployment dropped. So now all of a sudden, the rate cut bulls are become a deer in headlights, and they're stuck in this like, oh, what's going to happen now situation.
Well, that again, this is why it's just so interesting, because again, nothing goes in a straight line. And the fact, let's say that the rate cuts do come. Let's say that we get a rate cut in March, and then let's say we get another one in June. It's already priced in, right? And so, okay, so now we get to March, they cut. Do markets go higher? You know, let's say he cuts in March and he cuts again in June, unless he says we're cutting again in September or December, where are markets going to go? This is market moving on expectations. Listen, this is the exact same thing that happened with the dollar a year ago. And again, this is why I say, listen, I have a very strong, obviously fundamental view on where the dollar is headed. But I'm under no illusions it's going in a straight line. And I know that it's very possible the dollar goes to 95 before it goes to 150. Maybe it goes to 70. I don't know. I just try to figure out all the reasons that could lead to these things happening. But it's the same thing a year ago, 15 months ago, when the dollar was at 113 or 14, whatever it was. And rate hike expectations, where they had done all these hikes, but they were still expecting more hikes, right? And once Powell started saying they were going to slow the hikes and the expectations for further hikes started to slow, well, then the price came back, because the price was front running the rate hike expectations. So now, just the same way, the market is front running the rate cut expectations. So what happens if they do a couple cuts, but then they don't keep cutting? And the other thing that people say, well, not only are they going to cut, they're going to have to cut to zero and go to QE. Okay, the only reason they're going to cut to zero is if asset prices are getting crushed. They're not going to cut to zero when the Dow is at its all-time high. So again, you have to put yourself in the other guy's shoes. And then even if you hate central bankers and you hate Keynesian economics, to figure out what they're going to do, you have to sit in their shoes. And listen, you can't sit in Powell's shoes and then think like a gold bug. You not only have to sit in his shoes or sit in his chair, but you have to think like he does. He is not a gold bug. He's a Keynesian. He believes that he can control the market. So if you have the power to make these moves and you believe you're capable of doing it, what are you going to do? That's the way you need to think about central bankers, monetary authorities, politicians. Again, they may be completely wrong. They may be off their rocker. They may be totally misguided, but they don't think so, right? And so, you know, the expectations and markets trading on expectations, this is where the whole buy the rumor, sell the news phrase comes from. People front run the news, but then when the news hits, it's over because it's already priced in. And I just feel like a lot of this that we've seen in the last 6 weeks, directionally, it's appropriate. From a magnitude perspective, to me, it's gotten way ahead of itself. I hope that equities are high at the first week of January. Oh my God.
Well, we'll see. You've given us your forecast on that. We'll see how some of that plays out. We've done, this is our full length episode. We've toyed with a number of different segments throughout the year. One, we did two episodes on, and all these segments will continue to develop, but we did a WWJD, What Would Johnson Do? And we did one where we presented you with a question if you are a central banker. So if you're somewhat of a flyby on Brent and his ideas, and you're watching this video, you're probably like, oh, you know, Brent, the dollar bug and doesn't get it. And he's going to stay poor. Well, I encourage you to watch that video because I think it gives you more context as to how Brent really does think about the system. And there's a difference between what he wants, what he thinks should happen, which is what that video is about, and the reality of trying to manage money in a world of what actually is happening. And the ironic thing, what is actually happening is everyone who doesn't want Powell or doesn't think Powell is going to pull off a soft landing, they've already given it to him. They've already given it to him by continually front running the cuts because of a crisis he's created. Now he's not needing to do that. And the crisis isn't evolving because markets keep piling into FOMO and front running these potential cuts. And 2 years later, we've gone through this great reset. So we have a big week coming up next week. As I mentioned, this is probably going to be our last full length of the year, but we will come in with an update depending on what kind of fireworks or what kind of response happens to next week's data. Here's some of the things to keep an eye out for. Tuesday, we have CPI. Everything that's been going on the last 3 years is all based on inflation. It has been showing signs of cooling, so we'll see what kind of data we get out of CPI on Tuesday. And then Wednesday is the big FOMC rate decision from the Fed. Right around the same time, we'll be getting PPI, the producer price index, which is kind of a forward-looking idea of where inflation is headed. So we've got two inflation data sets coming up leading into a Fed decision. Brent, what's your take on the Fed's policy decision next week?
You know, I don't think that there's a way for them to come out and be exceptionally dovish. But if they come out and I don't think they're going to raise. I mean, they probably could. The market's given them the opportunity to raise, but I don't think they're going to raise. So people should go back and look at this at the December 2018 meeting, because Powell had been raising rates and he raised one last time in the December meeting, and the market puked. And that's when Mnuchin had to get on the phone with all the bank. Mnuchin was the Treasury Secretary. We had a huge down day on Christmas Eve and a huge down morning on the 26th. And there was all these pictures going around of Mnuchin on his cell phone calling all the bankers, trying to calm the markets. I have a hard time believing that Powell's going to do another hike and risk that same thing happening again. But if he is not hawkish, that's how we could get this melt up into the first week of January, that would basically give him full scope to then do another raise later in the year as opposed to a cut. So markets are mad. I think that the great reset is the perfect analogy because, again, we're kind of right where we were 2 years ago. Big down year last year, big year up year this year, and we're right back where we started. But now Powell's got all this ammunition. He's got 5.5% interest rates to work with. He's got the lowest unemployment rate to work with. Man, 2024 is going to be amazing.
Well, it has definitely been an interesting year, Brent. We appreciate everyone for coming along with us as we have kicked off season one at the start of this year. And it looks like we'll be wrapping it up now with this, our final full-length episode. And if we don't happen to pop back on before the end of the year with an update, just want to give some shout outs to some of the people who've been with us for a very long time and have been active both on Twitter and or on YouTube. We have Nathan Dallin on Twitter, frequently sharing our videos, leaving comments, Rev P, John Vandahar, Axel 100, both on Twitter and on YouTube. Chloe Bell is always there. Daniil, Pedro Cruz, Tata Gata, Moon Canoe, Jake Goldberg, often with the fun retweets of our episodes on Twitter. Genevieve, DWD1, Pathcoin, Blockchain Shane. We haven't seen much from him, but he pops in every once in a while and gives us a little bit of energy. Kit Kat, everyone who's participated, we really appreciate you. It's made it fun for us. We look forward to seeing everybody in season two. And Brent, if it turns out that this is the last time we record in 2023, do you have any last words for the Milkshakes fam?
No, you know, this year has been so fun. You know, John and I, you know, we kind of started it last fall, and then this year was like our first year, and we were really just trying to figure stuff out. But I think we've come a long way. We've had a lot of fun with it. I think we're going to introduce some new stuff next year as well, so we're looking forward to that. I appreciate everybody that tunes in. I kind of think it's funny that everybody wants to sit here and listen to you and I talk, but, you know, the fact that they do is fantastic. And, you know, I have to say a big thank you. You said a big thank you to a lot of the people who pop in. I got to say a big thank you to the haters as well. I mean, that's they kind of give me the fuel to keep doing this. And I know when there's people out there that hate what I'm saying, that I'm at least a little bit on the right track, and I'm happy to try to help those who are actually trying to learn. I do feel like you and I have a lot of fun with this, but I like to think that we are helping to kind of educate some people along the way. And so if that has been the case, I'm very thankful for that. And, you know, I wish everybody happy holidays and look forward to seeing everybody in the new year.
Awesome. Well, it is interesting how the initial idea was going to be you and I talking about markets, but a heavy focus on the haters, and we've kind of left them in the dust. They sometimes drive the conversation, at least the topics, but we definitely aren't giving them the limelight like we thought we would. And you know, one thing I will reference too is one bit of feedback we get frequently is that this, amidst all the noise, all the hyperbole, whether our conversations are entertaining or not, we certainly hear frequently that it's grounding. So I think that's a tremendous compliment for both of us. You can share your compliments, your hate, your disdain, whatever it might be, with Brent on Twitter. Like he said, it's fuel. So fuel the guy up. You can find him at Santiago AU Fund. You can find me at John Katsumita. And you can find this show on Twitter and on YouTube at Milkshakes Pod. We're going to keep bringing you new videos next year, maybe before the end of the year. And we have, as Brent mentioned, some interesting things to hopefully announce sometime in the first quarter. So we appreciate all of you. Have a great holiday, great rest of the year, and good luck with the next week. We'll see everybody really soon. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.